Welcome. I'm Dr. Joan Dahlketter. Welcome to Performing Edge Coaching International. It is February the 28th, 2013, and today we're going to be talking about handling athlete disappointments and also the Oscar Pistorius case, a little bit about that as a kind of an example. And most importantly, I'd just like to hear from you. The main purpose from the call is to answer your questions and to interact with you about your goals, your challenges, your successes, and success stories are always great. And so because we're talking about athlete disappointments, it's great to have, you share, if you have, if you can share your experiences as an athlete going through something, maybe a step back and then how you got through that, or also athletes, your athletes that you've been working with, setbacks that they are having now or have had in the past, and then we can talk about those, how to get through those, and I'm happy to help you with your with your questions with that, and you could also share your experiences with how you what worked and what didn't work, because this is a kind of like a mastermind group as well as mentoring program for helping you to get new ideas and get new perspective on things as well. So we've got people joining us here. This is great. It looks like PJ Ford, I think, just joined us here. Let me take off mute here. Yeah, is that TJ? I guess we're like turning the
hi.
Hi, it's a little bit static, I guess.
Yeah, when you unmuted me, it made a lot of static. It was fine when I was muted.
Yeah, if you can put your phone on your phone, and then hopefully everyone has static.
Yeah, I tried that. It doesn't work when I mute my phone. The static doesn't go away.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, is that better? I just wanted to introduce, let me see, I want to put this in Q&A mode. I've got a different, if you have a question, just press, when you're ready, press star 6 on your phone, and then, or if you have a comment, press star 6 on your phone, and then it'll show up on my Q&A caller list here, and then I can just open up your line, so that'll be easier so we can have a real clear line for our recording. I wanted to introduce, we have someone new, Willow Rockwell, who's a two-time bronze medalist at the World Championships in mountain biking, who's from Santa Cruz, and Willow, if you could put your, just press star 6 on your phone. There we go. I see it there. And it would be great to have you introduce yourself, and then we'll, I ask about athlete disappointments and getting through, setbacks, and I think you you have a great story about that, so it would be great to have you share that since you've been at the top level very recently, and I know you were the number one pick for the Olympics, to win the Olympic gold medal in 2012 in mountain biking. So, it'd be great to hear your story of kind of ups and downs and disappointments and coming back. Let me unmute you here. Yeah, there we go. Can you hear, say hi and see if we can hear
you? Hi, Dr. Joanne. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi. So, absolutely. Okay. Yes, I'd like to share. Obviously, a whole career in athletics is quite a long story, but I'll try to make it short and to the point about big disappointments and how to get over them. One of the main times in my career was the year of 2008. Of course, as a professional athlete, when your sport is in the Olympics, it is like the pinnacle of your goals and what you want to do, not only to go, but to win. So my whole life, I had really, been focused on going to the Olympics, and in 2007, I was the top-ranked U.S. rider and was practically a shoe-in for the Olympic team. And I don't really even now know what exactly happened to me in 2008, but I went from the front of the pack to the back of the pack consistently, like in every race, and I just watched my Olympic dream, even making the team, just fizzle out. Like, instead of being one of the top two girls that was going to be chosen. I was a pretty near back of the pack. And, of course, it was super crushing. I mean, there was my goal right there, almost realized the year before. And then when it came time for the Olympics, I just imploded. My body stopped working. My mind stopped working. Everything seemed like it stopped working. But the way I got through that is I just kept telling myself there must be some reason why this is happening, some reason that I don't understand, and some reason that no amount of mental training or physical training or physical not training, because I was a bit overtrained as well, was going to make a difference. So I just kept keeping the faith in something bigger than me. I'm not a religious person, but I do believe that there are, you know, mysteries that we can't always see right in front of our eyes. So for me, the way that worked out was the next year, in 2009, my team was trying to help take the pressure off me. They wanted me to do some more quote-unquote fun events that weren't going to be so World Cup oriented, and I didn't really want to do them, but as fate would have it, I met my now husband at one of those events, and he happens to be a 2000 downhill world champion in mountain biking, and he is just a natural at the coaching, sort of like a natural performance edge coach, actually, with just getting people in the zone of feeling good and in the vibe and remembering why I liked biking and remembering that it felt good to be alive. And all these things. And at the time, I was actually engaged to a different man in Canada, but both of us knew that that wasn't meant for marriage. So I think if I would have gone to the Olympics in 2008, I would have then retired because my goal would have been realized, and I would have also married the wrong person. And so with my, you know, super setback in 2008, I ended up coming back with a vengeance in 2009, meeting, you know, the man of my dreams, and also winning a bronze medal in the World Championships that year in Australia, and continued to rise to the top. And in 2010, I was the best in the world for a period of time, actually ending up finishing second overall in the World Cup, and another bronze medal. And again, I was like a shoo-in for the team in 2012, and this time even expected to win, one of the favorites to win. And I got pregnant with my daughter, who's now 14 months old, and that, again, was a change of plans. So I never really did go to the Olympics, but I can tell you that my husband and my daughter and the experiences I've been through in my life are more important to me than any gold medal. So for me, I think it was just that belief that there really is a bigger plan for me, and maybe it wasn't going to work out in my quote-unquote dream, but that's what kept me going, and that's what actually still helps me now to look back on my career with no regrets and just a lot of thankfulness of what I was able to do, achieve, and experience.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much, Willow. Yeah, what a great story. And so why were you interested in the Performing Edge Coach Program here, sort of to make that, kind of talk about the transition from athlete into you know, being a coach at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it has been a year since I retired from the sport, and I needed that time to, you know, really put my own personal life in order, take care of my daughter, and have the time to reflect on what it was I actually really gained from my career as an athlete. And this way of coaching, what you do, just so, like, connected with me and what helped me reach the top of my sport, and more than reach the top of my sport, actually experience joy while I was competing and while I was training. So I was just very attracted and excited to see that it's like an official way of doing things, kind of, you know, and that there's actually techniques I could learn and even pass on, because for me, the biggest gains I ever made in sport had to do when I got myself or had people around me help me get into that vibe of just really good feeling before I even went to train or went to compete, that if I could really work on staying in that good feeling place, it made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, that's great. And so now it's great that you can make oftentimes top athletes have trouble making that transition from being an athlete to doing something else. What else am I doing with my life? And so, it's great that it's a natural transition to go from, being, you know, number one or top medal, top athlete in your in mountain biking for you, and being at the top of your game to then like you say, being able to use that experience, use your name and reputation, and then go into coaching others, and like you said, you're really interested in the mental and emotional side of training, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, because that was when I really stepped it up a notch with my performance, is when that piece clicked in, when I realized how important it was. It wasn't going to be how much harder I trained or if I had a different coach for the physical aspect, or even if I got technically better, because the sport of mountain biking is quite technical. You have to be very good at handling your bike and getting over obstacles and these types of things. But I had gotten to the point where it was my mind and belief in myself and just the overall joy that was lacking and that was really holding me back. So when you really experience what a difference that makes, you know, just even doing that mental and emotional training for a couple weeks and almost leaving the bike alone is when I really had some huge, huge breakthroughs. And it's amazing, and I think so much healthier too, because as an athlete, especially a super endurance athlete, I'm sure you know, you can really overuse your body and overtax all your systems. So you need that extra kind of magic potion in there, and that's what I think that this is.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm so glad that you're part of our program, Willow, and that you're sharing your story. Thank you so much for that. And I think all of us in this program have had some fitness or athletic expertise in our areas. I know TJ with your marathoning, and Amy with tennis, and I was just thinking of Christo is in South Africa. He's actually one of our certified coaches, and he's into all kinds of sports there, golf and track. And we've got I'm hoping to have him on our program one of our calls here, because he's in South Africa, and he's actually an amputee himself from a motorcycle accident. And track and field, and so it would be interesting to get his perspective on Oscar Pistorius and that whole situation too, since he's right there in South Africa. So that's great. Thanks, Willow, again, see if anybody else has questions or comments. Hi, Amy and TJ. I've got it in Q&A mode right now so that we can get a clear recording. So just press *6 on your phone if you have a comment or a question. And then I'll just see your number there, and then I'll unmute you so you can talk. Is that good? So have anything you want to any kind of questions or anything you want to share? Just press *6 on your phone, and then I'll see you there, and I can unmute your line. So I wanted to mention, they've got someone new, Yves, who's in Luxembourg, and he's in Belgium, and he had a question about, he was mentioning he's working with an athlete that is having, some difficulty. He says, note that I'm working with a triathlon runner who has a race in August, and he says that he is not convinced by coaching, and he's also absolutely against relaxation exercises with MP3s. He told me that even massage is painful mentally for him, as he feels like he needs to be in action all the time. He says, I view his perception that an athlete should always be in tension and have to be moving. Now I have to convince him that energy can be used more appropriately, and I want to remember your story about the story I told, I guess, about the Ethiopian runner that was Gabriel Selassie many years ago, when he showed he was very calm. That was one of the stories I tell in one of the modules on the Performing Edge Coach program there, where Gabriel Selassie was standing right at the starting line of ready to run the final of the 10,000 meters in the Olympics, and he was actually laughing. He was laughing, just busting up, leaning over, could hardly stand up. He was cracking up. Somebody in the sideline is obviously he's talking to it that's making him laugh. And here he is, you know, in this very serious, everyone else is super focused, and he's just busting up, laughing right at the starting line, and you think, geez, you know, is he going to be able to run here? And then, of course, the gun goes off, and boom, he's just right into the race and, you know, totally focused. He's probably much more relaxed since he had that good laugh. And then he ended up, you know, winning the gold medal, you know, in the 10,000 meters. So it's a good example of how, you know, we can, if we need to, I think, have all sorts of different emotions and different, you know, things to be able to, you know, we can't be serious all the time. We've got, if you lighten up, especially before a race, then oftentimes that can lead to great performances. And so humor is something that you can use. I think ease with your athletes, you know, be able to help them relax and just be able to kind of talk about the pendulum effect. I think, you know, it's like the pendulum, the balance in our lives is like the swinging of a pendulum. It needs to swing toward the right, toward peak performance, and then it needs to swing toward the left to, you know, full recovery and relaxation in order to come to swing back toward the right, toward another peak performance. And I think the problem with most athletes is we're always swinging to the right and trying to overtrain and over excel and feel really, you know, we get really overusing our minds and our bodies, and we realize that, think of it like a pendulum. If you can swing back towards the other side to relax and have full recovery and have that time to yourself, then, you know, you're going to be able to train well. So I know with especially younger athletes, it's hard to get them to relax and you know, just taking little steps, you know, maybe they can just take a few deep breaths and that can help to kind of bring the energy level down a little bit. Because if you just stay at that high level for a long period of time, you know, of course it can lead to stress-related problems and overuse injuries. So that's one thing I would say. Eve's in, I think he's trying to call in, I think, from Belgium. And and so I wanted to be able to answer, but I'm not sure if he's calling in okay or not. So Eve, I wanted to answer your question on that, and then you can hear it on the recording. And all of you, if you have questions, you know, for like our next call too, you can always email in your questions, and then I'll answer them on our next call. So and I think Amy, you asked in particular about Oscar Pistorius. So, TJ, you got. I see you got your hand up here because you pressed star six. So let me unmute you. Yeah. Okay. Great. Can you hear me, TJ?
Yeah, I can. I basically just wanted to say welcome to Willow and just try this out and see if it worked. And apparently, it worked. So, I was really devastated when I heard about Oscar Pistorius because he's been one of my heroes for years. And so I'm just interested to hear sort of your perspective on what's going on. And, like, you know, I don't know what to think. I'm sure we don't have all the information. We never do. So any insight that you can give, I would be super appreciative of, because it's really affected me. I mean, I really felt like he was someone we could look up to. And with all this stuff, you know, it's just hard. So...
Yeah, I know. He's been such a hero in so many ways for athletes and, you know, for amputees and for people in South Africa. And, let's talk about that. And, and anything you want to share, TJ, about what you're doing these days?
Well, I'm actually taking coursework in something called somatic experiencing, which I think is going to dovetail really wonderfully with the performing edge coaching and with the body work that I'm doing. And it's about kind of felt sensations in the body from old traumas that have happened and sort of how that gets stuck in us and how we can work through that. So that's what I've been studying and will continue to study for a couple of years. And I think it's just going to go great with everything that I'm already doing, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Okay, well, good. Yeah, it's good to have a variety of trainings and putting lots of different things together. Yeah, that's fantastic. So,
yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, welcome. I'm so glad you're here, TJ. And yeah,
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, we'll talk more. And then I just wanted to, Amy, you've got your hands up here. Let me just unmute you. Yeah, hi, Amy. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Yeah, did you have a question or comment?
I was just interested because I knew that you probably did have some contact with Oscar, and I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows, but it's just it's such a shame that this whole thing has happened, and your insights into elite athletes. I just wanted to, you know, kind of hear what your thoughts were. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. I think. Yeah, it's great to hear your voice, Amy, and have you on the call for sure. And yeah, I think it affects all of us in different ways. Yeah, I actually saw and interviewed Oscar up in at the Prefontaine meet. I was able to obtain a press pass, media pass there, right before the Olympics. Just, 3 or 4 weeks before the Olympics, and so, which is very prestigious, you know, if you're, those of you who are into track and field, of course, know it's probably the most prestigious, biggest track meet in the United States, it's just very, every athlete that, you know, wants to go to the Olympics in an Olympic year, or most of them would probably try to be at that track meet. I was working with Sally Capiego at the time, and still am for, you know, and she did really well there, and then she was competing for Kenya, and she ended up getting the, you know, the silver medal in the 10,000 meters at the Olympics after competing in Prefontaine as well. So people do tend to do really well there, and so at that time, Oscar had gone through so much, you know, because there was a lot of controversy about him, you know, people saying that the blades were an advantage and that he shouldn't be able to compete in the Olympics, and he had to go through a lot of political, frustration for that, disappointment, and, you know, kind of going back and forth to even being able to compete at a top level with, being a double amputee. And having this new technology for his legs, so that was one big struggle to go through, where he wasn't sure he could even compete. And then they finally, you know, of course, allowed him to compete. So that was one big struggle. And then the next big struggle was just being able to get a qualifying time. And I guess he had to run. He ran there at the Prefontaine meet, but he didn't quite make the qualifying time. So at that time, he wasn't even sure if he could go to the Olympics still. He was going to have to run somewhere else and do a qualifying time, and so he was very frustrated there. I know that he's, and I got to talk with him a bit. Of course, he was mobbed by people because he's very well-known and sought after, but I know that he's, from talking with him and that he shared with me, that he's a, you know, real high adrenaline kind of person, and you have to be, you know, be a 400-meter runner and get to the top of your game, and, you know, be able to go from when the gun goes off and be able to react quickly to situations. And I think that's important skill to have, to be able to be a successful athlete. But you know, I'm of course, none of us know what really happened, and we won't know, you know, for a long time, because I think the next trial isn't until June or July this year, and so there's a lot of investigation going on. But I just know that in general, athletes, just like that pendulum I was talking about before, athletes tend to be too much on the right side. We're swinging toward the right pendulum, toward peak performance and fast twitch muscles and high adrenaline, and then athletes in general oftentimes don't have that ability to go to swing to the other side to relaxation and to be able to be in a calmer mode. And so I think that oftentimes that affects personal relationships too. To be a fully balanced athlete, you need to be able to have both, I think, be able to be at that high, quick adrenaline, energy level, and then also to be able to relax. And I think that when you're, we know that he was, into race cars too, and could drive 140 miles an hour, and really into fast stuff, fast performance, and that adrenaline can be used in a really positive way for peak performance in athletics. It could also be used in a negative way, where you're, reacting too quickly in personal situations and not being able to think through what's happening. And you basically, what may have been happening is he was, reacting just like when the gun goes off for a race. You don't think, you just go for it. We don't know exactly what happened with the personal relationship, but, that same kind of personality trait may have been coming out, where he was, not thinking things through and reacting too quickly, just like he does in a race. And that doesn't serve, that doesn't serve people well, if you're in another situation where you need to think things through. And I think, with athletes, one of the things we can do as performing edge coaches is also work on the personal side of things, not only not only the performance side of things, but athletes also need to interact with their coaches and with their teammates, and they've got girlfriends and boyfriends and spouses, and there's all kinds of other things going on too, and often that's the thing that gets in, that makes life difficult for athletes. So it's like when you're in a tough situation, I think one of the things we can do as a performing edge coach is how teach that skill of in athletes of being able to say, okay, when you're angry or when you're frustrated or you're not sure what's going on, to take five deep breaths. And, it's like the fifth chapter in my book, and you're performing edge, they talk about breathing and relaxation. You need to, if you could take those five deep breaths and then say to yourself, okay, I'm frustrated here. If I say, how am I going to respond to this person? If I go choose plan A here, just react really quickly, what's the response, what's the consequence going to be? Maybe I could do plan B, and I could not be so aggressive, and what's the response going to be there? Or I could do plan C and say this other thing. What do I think that's going to, what kind of reaction is that going to have? And if you can think about, the different choices you have, and teach your athletes to think of different ways they could respond to a frustrating situation, just even that split second of taking a moment to think, okay, I have some choices here. I don't have to just do the first thing that comes to my mind. I think we can help ourselves and help keep our athletes out of a lot of trouble that way. It's just, I think the Oscar Pistorius situation, I got to kind of talk with him, and he just seems like after a race, of course, he's, more... I got to talk to him when he was feeling kind of disappointed, because at that point in the Prefontaine meet, he hadn't made the qualifying time he wanted, and he was frustrated, and he was feeling a little bit more vulnerable at that moment. But other, of course, then when he did make the Olympic team and was able to do well at the Olympics, and then of course, compete and clean up at the Paralympics, and make history, I think then, then there's another whole other aspect that comes in, and that's, the fame and fortune that athletes have when they have a lot of success. And I think a lot of times athletes don't know how to handle that success and don't know how to handle all that's happening in their lives and being on the front cover of magazines and being sought after I think, you know, all that kind of feeds into one's ego, and so, and you tend to think you're kind of above anything that happens, and so, and athletes have difficulty handling maybe if they, we don't know the situation for sure, but if they were arguing, you know, he and his girlfriend or something, you know, sometimes you can't handle someone else disagreeing with you. You know, we're just not sure. Of course, we don't know whether this was an accident or whether it was an intentional thing, the shooting. But, you know, it's something that whatever it is, you know, Oscar's going to need to live with that for the rest of his life. And it's, I think there's two things that you can never take back in life, words said and deeds done. And I think that's why it's really important to think through situations beforehand, because we can always say afterward, I wish I hadn't done that, or you know, kind of replay the mistakes over and over in our minds. But if you can have that ability to anticipate what might happen or plan ahead, and that's why visualization and these mental training techniques are so powerful with what we do and what we can teach our athletes. If you can teach athletes to visualize what might happen and visualize all the different possible scenarios and have a plan for handling each one successfully, then you can get through, you know, have your athletes be more prepared for different situations. Of course, this is something with Oscar that probably, you know, you couldn't really anticipate, but what we can do is help our athletes be more prepared, just as a whole person. I know in the, we talk about there's those strong aspects of life, of our strong personal traits, like, aggressiveness and power just being able to be really focused, and all of those kind of strong traits that athletes have. But we also need to think about the softer traits that we need to teach in our athletes, like compassion and relaxation and reflection, being able to think about those as well. Those other traits, so that we have more. You can help your athletes to be more balanced and handle anything that happens in their lives. So, for instance, a quick example was I just saw a client this week. We'll call her Mary, and she a volleyball player that was having difficulty with her coach and not getting enough playing time. She's clearly has the best statistics and is playing the best on the team, and yet the coach is favoring a different athlete for her position. It's a position called libero, which is the digger, the person that gets the ball first when the ball comes over the net, and she's not getting that playing time, and so she wanted to know, how do I have that conversation with my coach to ask her for more playing time? And I said, well, because the other player is clearly aggressive and just goes right up to the coach and says, I want to play now, and gets her way. And so I said, well, think of three possibilities. There's the aggressive mode, you know, where you can just go in there and be really strong and think about what reaction you have there. Or there's the kind of the middle road of being assertive and strong but not overly aggressive. Or there's the kind of softer approach. She called it the wimpy approach, where you're a little bit softer and not so, you know, just not as saying things as strongly. And so we tried out kind of all those three different approaches, and I had her kind of practice with me what she would say. And she said, I'm going to be going to this college. We're going to be playing in front of the college where I'm going to school, and I'd really like to be able to, you know, play in front of the coaches and my future teammates here. And she's in high school, so we practiced that, and she got to try out kind of the different approaches, the super aggressive approach and then the medium approach and the softer approach. Try all three of those and see how they felt, and because everyone has to find their own way and how you react to people. And I think that's a really good exercise for athletes to be able to, you know, practice different modes. What if they, and an if-then kind of thing, what if the coach says this? What are you going to say? And what if, you know, in different situations, if this happens, then what will you do? Give athletes different scenarios to practice. And then the more they practice those, the more they'll be able to do extraordinarily well in any situation, be prepared for that. So I think, you know, the important thing with any kind of disappointment, you know, like Willow, you were sharing, is like you shared so well, that what you're able to do, make the transition from a difficult loss to ultimate gain as quickly and smoothly and painlessly as possible. And, you know, oftentimes we can have our worst performance at a time when it's critical for us to do our absolute best. And, you know, maybe you were peaked to do really well in an Ironman triathlon or a marathon, win your age division, but the, you know, circumstances didn't allow for that day. And, you know, I think major losses in competitions and in life, they have a way of playing with our self-esteem, and we tend to, you know, be most susceptible to feeling down when we expect to do well at a competition and then we end up with a poor outcome instead. And those consequences, they can, you know, lead to anxiety and self-doubt and self-defeating thoughts and, you know, even long-term depression for some athletes. And I think these disappointments, they can be devastating, but there's no reason that they need to be long-term, because I think if you can reinforce in your athletes that to lose is to be human, we all lose at some point, and everyone who thinks and feels and lives, and we experience loss, and I think no one can escape it, not even the world's greatest champions. But if you can help your athletes to, you know, make that transition from a difficult loss to an ultimate gain as quickly, smoothly as you can, then you're going to be in a great position as a coach, and you'll help your athletes to, you know, to move forward. And I mean, of course, winning is easy, or meeting your goal is easy to accept in a competition, but it's the athletes that want to be successful, they're the ones that learn to accept disappointments as well. So I think disappointments is where it's a huge opportunity to learn. And losing, in some situations, it can be far more beneficial in the long run if you learn to properly, you know, re-examine your goals and assess your training program and make the necessary adjustments. And I think, you know, the problem with many athletes is that they don't take the time to analyze what led to a successful performance. Or we take, you know, falling short of a goal, you know, when you fall short of a goal, it can force you to take a good look at what went wrong. And so I think what we need to do as performing edge coaches, too, what's really important with athletes is to, you know, help them set process goals, not only outcome goals like your winning the race or winning the game or scoring well, but to be able to, you know, look at the process, be able to say, okay, there's many different ways of evaluating this. There's your, not only that, but there's your effort level, there's your confidence level, there's what you did, you know, during the game within the game kind of thing, what you did in the middle. So if you can help your athletes put performance in that kind of proper perspective, set process goals, and then evaluate them on the basis of that progress rather than outcomes. Like you might set a goal of, you know, maintaining good training form or concentrating for longer periods of time, rather than, you know, more time than in, say, the previous game or race. And I think this goal is, that kind of goal is within everyone's control. You can control your attitude and your effort level. Those are two things that people can work on. And I think they can be objectively evaluated with just I've got those two log books. I think I'll put those right after this. I'll put those in our members area. Again, my articles on log books and how to evaluate your not only the physical part but the mental training part. So you know, you can have your athletes like evaluate, you know, rate yourself 1 to 10, how much concentration did I have, and rate yourself 1 to 10, how positive was I, and how much, 1 to 10, how much energy did I have, how focused was I on this particular, you know, whatever skill, you know, I was working on. So if you can have your athletes evaluate those things, then you'll be, you know, those are things that people, and not just a yes or no, but if they put a scale of 1 to 10 and create a little log book where you just put your, you know, like the days down the left-hand side, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, on a left column, and then across the top, put each of the skills that you want them to evaluate, and it could change over time. You know, put the mental training skills, confidence, the value, energy, focus, put all those things there, then, you know, you can see, then you can go over with them their goals on their logbook and see how much they're progressing. You know, an example was I worked with one runner who felt like, you know, winning his division, his age group division, was the only outcome he would accept, and he just, you know, has this heavy race schedule, and he's chasing medals and victories, and whenever he took second place, he just regarded that as a failure, and I think he would compensate for his loss by then he just overtrained for the next race to the point of injury, and he kept asking himself, well, is that all that's there, just constantly chasing these medals? And I helped him in our sessions be able to learn how to evaluate, you know, accomplishments in other ways than just the outcome. He could look at, you know, his enjoyment of the sport and how much fun he was having. That's really another thing that you want to have your athletes rate is 1 to 10. How much fun did I have during this workout? How much enjoyment, how much satisfaction was there? Did I find something to laugh about? He learned gradually over time that placing second in a race was actually a good thing. He could grow. He got angry. He got frustrated, but he could grow from that experience. Eventually led to, you know, more personal satisfaction. And then better performances come from that. And just one other thing I wanted to emphasize was how teaching your athletes how to approach loss in a different way, a different kind of put it on a different set of eyeglasses. When you have a loss or a disappointment, like Willow, you were talking about with your mountain biking, you know, I think losses in races, they can be an opportunity to find out something that's difficult to learn under any other circumstances. You can say to yourself, I really screwed up this time, or all those hours of training have been wasted, or you know, I let my friends down, you know, let my sponsors down, my family. Or you can approach the situation, that same situation, with a more forgiving attitude. And you can say, okay, all right, I came up short on my goal, but this doesn't mean I'm a worthless person. I'm disappointed, but it's not a life or death situation. And this is really important to have your athletes say, this has nothing to do with my value as a human being. What it has, or my identity, you know, because we get so tied up with our identity as an athlete or with our particular performance, you want to say it has to do with performing just that specific skill under particular conditions on this certain day. And just look at the big picture. Help your athletes take a look at the bigger picture, that 10 years now from now, this experience will probably be just, you know, a drop in the bucket, just one small thing in my whole life. And that it's not, doesn't define you as a person. It's one experience that you can learn from. And then you can ask yourself, well, what positive lessons can I learn from this experience that'll help improve my performance next time? You know, and then ask them to say, okay, what things can I do differently next time? And ask them to actually write those down with you, you know, brainstorm. Okay, they might say, okay, I can get better rest during the next week. I could, you know, eat better, not be junking out on food, overeating, you know, while I'm tapering for race, which athletes tend to do. You know, I could do deep breathing to relax at the starting line, do my centering techniques, warm up, you know, in the last mile of the course so I know what to expect at the finish line. You know, just write down all kinds of things that they could do differently I think that really helps, especially right after a race or a game, a disappointing experience, if you can have your athlete write down and go over, okay, what can I do differently next time? That really helps with the healing process and helps them get through what's going on, what happened there. So, and then you can even do a visualization. I've done that with athletes right after a disappointing experience. We sat down with them and said, okay, let's play. So that was one thing that happened. We can't change what happened in just now or in the past. But what we can change is, your perception of it and what happens in the future. So let's create a new movie. Let's go back and replay that, that game. Let's say, Amy, if you're working with tennis, let's play a new movie of that tennis match and see if, or the ballet, see if I can, what kind of movie would you like to play? What would you like to have happened? And then have them describe that, and then actually go through that visualization and see it happening the way they'd like it to happen. And that way it really helps remove the memory, remove the mistakes, because if you don't do that, then athletes tend to replay the mistakes over and over in their mind, and then the body just follows those mental instructions. But if you can start a new movie right there and replay the situation the way you'd like it to happen, then the mind will start replaying that, the positive image that you've just given them. So I think if you can do that kind of reframing exercise as a visualization, that would be really powerful, help athletes get over that disappointment more quickly. And I think if you can also, with athletes, if you can emphasize that you are not alone in this, they tend to think, I'm the only one that's experiencing this, but to put it, normalize it and say, all great athletes and all athletes have failed at some point, and it's something that everybody experiences. We're all together with this, and the successful athletes learn to turn their losses into eventual gain. And you can say, I know you didn't meet your goal, and that can be frustrating, but you don't have to regard it as a catastrophe. You can determine that just on this particular day, that strategy or this didn't work, or maybe fitness wasn't where it was last year, or we need to work on concentration. But not to destroy themselves over a poor performance. Just use it as an opportunity to get even stronger and be even better prepared for the next event, and be open to new options. I was just giving an example of when I was in the San Francisco, after I won the San Francisco Marathon, I got a stress fracture in my tibia and a stress fracture, and I couldn't run for 6 months, and so I, took up running, I took up swimming, to be able to, stay in shape and keep from going crazy, and I took up cycling, and got into learning, just trying to learn the fundamentals of, wasn't that good of a swimmer, but just trying to get faster at it, and got more and stronger as a cyclist, and then the triathlon, in 82, then the triathlon started to get really popular, and that was when I saw, Julie Moss crawling across the finish line, in February 82 Ironman, when everyone was, they were showing that over and over on ABC Wide World of Sports, when she, Julie Moss kind of lost her energy and was just kind of crawling and to the finish line, and then was passed by Kathleen McCartney right at the last minute. And I looked at that and I said, I'm going to do that race. I'm going to do the Ironman. And I just made that decision and trained hard for 6 months. And by then, my stress fracture was healing and could get back to running. And they ended up deciding to do a second Ironman in 82 in October 82. So I went to it and ended up passing the previous race winner, Kathleen McCartney, with 2 miles to go, and ended up getting second in that race. So it's just an example of how I turned a disappointing experience of having a stress fracture and not being able to run for 6 months, which could be really devastating, and most athletes, gain a lot of weight and get really depressed and can just end up, not even continuing with their career. But I just decided, okay, I'm going to try something different. And I went a different direction, and then I ended up being able to, you know, discover a different talent that I may never have discovered otherwise. So a lot of times, I think if you can be open to whatever opportunities may present to you, or just even if you don't know what that is, just saying, you know, or telling your athletes there's something else in store for you that's even better, or your time is coming, and keep that door open. I think it can be really powerful for your athletes. So yeah, I just wanted to. I don't know, Pam, are you there too? I just wanted to check in with you. I know you were there earlier. If you want to press *6 on your phone too, and share any reactions you have, or I don't know if you have athletes you've worked with that have disappointments or things that they want to work on. Oh, there you are. Okay, so I just unmuted you. Can you you can?
It's there? Pam, and I am here.
Oh, good. Yeah, what do you think of all this?
There's a lot there. So yeah, it's all about figuring out disappointments, and I'm thinking of my soccer players, because I had a soccer player who emailed me about negative energy during games and how he's the captain and he wants to know what he can do about it. And so all the things that you were talking about, changing that negative energy into positive and that negative thoughts into positive, have to do with disappointments as well as during the middle of games, where you just have to take that breath and change it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know you're in California and you're flying, have this great opportunity to fly in Vermont. They're flying you there once a month to do your workshops with the soccer players?
Yes. Yeah, and it's been going great. And they're getting to, they've been in their indoor season, and they're going to start going outside. Actually, let's see, I go next weekend, and then that's when their season really starts. So I'll get to see if they can really put, you know, the mental skills stuff into play in their gameplay more. So it'll be, I'm excited to see how it goes. I mean, the feedback that I've gotten has been great of how it's going, and that the kids are using the skills. So we'll see how it goes in the gameplay.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And how do you structure it just so everyone else knows? It can be a learning experience for everyone. You give talks or a workshop, or
workshops with each age group team. Their age group teams 10 to 18, so there's 6 teams, and we meet for an hour and a half. So it's just mostly a lot of education and then some group discussions, and then they have homework of taking whatever we're working on and using skills. And so they're having to do like the logs, but, you know, log how they're practicing the mental skills. And then each time when I come back, we go over the homework and how it was and what was helpful and what's working for them. So at least I know they're thinking about it that way. In a group situation, you never know how many kids are really taking it and using it. And so the homework helps. And then the other thing that I've done is after, because I'm coming in once a month, is then sent out a email to all the kids of, okay, this is what we did and this is what your assignments are. So then coaches know, parents know what they're supposed to be working on, focusing on. So
yeah, that's fantastic. So
yeah,
that's really great. Are you able to do visualizations with them too? Or a group kind of
not thing? As yes, each when I'm meeting with them, yes. And then I haven't done any MP3s because I haven't. Actually, I should probably do it. Send it to the director of the program, and then he can mass it out to everybody on the team. You know, the whole bunch of kids. But I haven't done it. But each time I'm there during that period of time, I do at least 2 little visualizations with them. And then we talk about how it went and how to personalize it for them. So,
yeah. Can you?
And then what I've had them do is after each experience, take a card and write their experience and write, you know, either their power words or their anchor words, so that then they can use it to practice too. So,
yeah, great. Can you share any, you know, disappointments or problems they're having that you're able to coach them through?
Well. And I haven't had a follow-up email from this kid. This one kid, he's a 16-year-old, and he's like the captain, and he says, I'm a person that really gets negative and gets down and then starts yelling at the kids. And once he gets in that negative place, he can't switch it to the positive. So I sent him out an email. He hasn't responded back. So that will be one that I'll follow up on with him next week, just to see if he's been able to use any of the techniques that I have given him, to see if he can change it up, because he felt like he could not change his process of thinking, that once he's in that negative place, he just stays there. And so I gave him some, you know, he developed an anchor, and then I'll have to just see if he's used it in practice and or any match play, to see if he's been able to go from the negative to the positive. So that was his setback that I've, and I TBD of how it turns out.
Okay, to be announced.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, one exercise you can, that everyone can do with you can do with your athletes too, is you know, that simple: take a piece of paper and draw a vertical line down the center, and then on the left hand side write your negative thoughts or self doubts, and you know, they might write, oh, I can't do this, or this is too hard, or I'm not getting any better. And then write on the right-hand side your power words or positive reframing. So write, you know, every step I'm getting closer to my goal, or I can do this. I have the ability. Every day I'm getting, my mind and body are getting stronger, healthier every day.
Mm-hmm.
And help them to write down maybe like 3 power words for every one of the negative thoughts, so that they kind of get a bank. After a while, you develop a bank of positive self-statements. And then
yeah,
what you do is take those positive self-statements, have them write those down, bring them into you, and then you can create an MP3 around that. So that's really
cool.
Yeah.
And I actually, my session, I guess it's next weekend, is dealing with the inner critic. And I am going to do an exercise like that, where they put the negatives and then they reframe it into a positive statement, and then they make an affirmation out of it. So, yeah, and have them write them down. And then what I'll have them do, too, is they'll just have to either share them with a partner or share them amongst the team, too, because if one person has a statement, then the rest of the team hears it. They can say, oh, I like that statement. And they can use it as one of their affirmations too. So,
yeah. So, are you going through the chapters, some of the chapters in the Your Performing Edge book then with them?
Yeah, using that and then some other stuff that I have. Yeah. Yeah, the inner critic is your chapter, right?
Yeah, right. So that's
pretty- So it's just that negative self-talk, so which kids need to learn that they can reframe and redo the way that they're thinking. And so a lot of kids think, oh, I thought it this way, that's the way it has to stay. So,
yeah. With a team, a lot of times it can end up being a negative, you know, kind of a spiral. If one kid's thinking negative, it's like a
absolutely.
It's contagious.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to teach them, that, okay, you can help each other out, too. When you see somebody struggling, say something positive or remind them of something positive. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, like Amy, you were talking last time, I think, about needing approval, having that perfectionism and approval. And a lot of times some coaches are very positive, but other ones, you know, they only, they hardly ever give positive reinforcement, or they're only looking at the mistakes. Yeah, and the coach, the only time they talk is when they're giving some, you need to improve here, here's the problem. And they're just saying the negative stuff. And so, and here you've got all these athletes that are dying for approval. So one of the things you can do as a coach, I think, is teach athletes to be their own coach, to be able to say good job to themselves,
some
self-approval, even if the coach doesn't notice, or to be able to say, okay, I did really well on that, and that's where the logbook comes in handy, too. And then also to each other, you know, to support each other through it, and when they see a teammate doing a good job, to say, hey, that was great effort, so that, because we all need that recognition, and a lot of times it doesn't come from the coach, or if it's a team effort, you know, you might the team it might have done really well on something, and one team member's doing really well, but yet the team is losing and they're not getting recognized. So it's good to recognize that individual effort as well as the team, how the team's doing, right? Yeah, that's great. Yeah, any comments, Amy or TJ?
This is Amy. I just wanted to mention, when I did my workshop at Haverford College for the varsity field hockey team, I made a group affirmation for them, and then I did an affirmation for the offense, an affirmation for the defense, and they seemed to really like that because it kind of pulled them together in the direction that they performed. And so I was just thinking about that when you were talking about your soccer team.
So you mean you did an affirmation as an MP3?
No, just a positive affirmation. I made one up for the whole team. And
Okay.
Yeah, and I made one up for the offense, and I made one up for the defense. And they like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we need one for the goalkeepers, too.
Right, yeah. I had one for the goalie, too.
Yeah, good. Okay, that's a good idea.
Then the other thing that I did, which worked really well, there were about 30 kids there from the varsity team, and I asked them to sit down and look at the person next to them, and that they each should write down 3 things that they are going to contribute to the team this year. What are 3 things that they can bring out of themselves that's going to add as a great, you know, contributing factor to the team? And then they discussed it between the two of them, and then one of them had to stand up and tell me, you know, what the other one said. And it had a really great dialogue going.
Oh, yeah, I bet. That's a good idea, too. Good idea. Thank you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That was with which team, Amy?
That was with the field hockey team at Haverford College, and then I did it 2 weeks ago with the Pennsylvania Ballet. I had the dancers, and I asked them to discuss with the person sitting next to them what are 3 things that they would like to contribute to the whole concept of the ballet company. In what way can they make a contribution personally? And they really liked that. It got a great discussion going.
Yeah, keeps that all that negative stuff away and keeps it really on a positive note. And it helps them to think about what strengths and attributes do I have that I could.
One of them said it reminded me of just my pure love of dancing. That's going to be my contribution. It's just how much I kind of forgot how much I really love dancing.
Yeah. Mm,
that's what it's all about wherever you are.
Yeah.
What did some of the other ones say for dancing or for field hockey? Can you remember what they were going to contribute?
That they were going to work as a unit more, that they were going to, try to do some relaxation techniques and get themselves in the right ideal performance state before they played, that they were going to try to be more positive, judge it a little bit less.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great. Yeah. Good that you – did you write those down and all?
You know what? I didn't, but now that you say that, before I forget them all, I should write them down. The other issue I'm having – I don't want to take too much time. I just wanted to mention this to you quickly – is I can't really – I haven't been able to get the coach to give me a recommendation because she said it's very, very tricky with the NCAA, whether they're allowed to, on somebody's website, say, I worked with Haverford College, with this coach, with this team. She said they're very, very fussy about, wanting their name to be on a website so that other teams are going to, see, oh, well, they worked with this person.
Huh.
She gave me a great recommendation personally, but I don't know if I can actually post it as the university, though. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, it'd be good to write, if you have it written down, or that you could share, at least have those kinds of things in your files or on a Word document, and then if you're working for someone else or someone else needs a recommendation, you could at least have that, and you could email it, you know, to someone, to other people, you know, privately, so at least you have that recommendation in your files without putting it on your website. I guess that's one thing, at least to have it there. Maybe, yeah, sometimes, I don't, yeah, there's some people would prefer their name only, or some people prefer the organization only, or just ask if there's, or sometimes if they change, maybe they want to change the wording or something, just to ask if there's any kind of flexibility there, I guess. Yeah, you just have to work with what they're willing to do.
Right, yeah, that's a good idea, though. I could email, you know, the statement, and then if they needed it, to have her be in touch.
Yeah, at least you have it in your files, and you could email it to people personally that need it, kind of thing, and have it on paper or something. So, yeah, but, yeah, I know it's you want to just try to get as many recommendations, testimonials as you can from different people, and most of the time, I think people will allow you to, you know, put it on your website, I think. You just have to, and then, of course, yeah, audio or text is good, and then audio is even better, and video is the best, kind of thing for recommendations. So, yeah, because you're doing great work, and, yeah, you want to get, have those good positive statements there. So, yeah, that's great. Thanks, Amy, for contributing that. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Willow, are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Yeah. Any comments? Yeah. Thanks again for sharing your story at the beginning. And it was just helpful to get some gems of ideas here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. I'm just absorbing it all. It's cool just to hear experiences of people talking with teams and how they do it. Just sort of visualizing what I would do as I'm listening, you know, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Any we could just finish up by just if each of you can share maybe one thing, one takeaway, or one thing you learned today, or one thing that was most helpful for you. Amy or Pam or Willow? I think TJ had to leave there to go to a client.
I like the whole approach of really focusing on what they're doing right, you know, because I wish I had learned that much, much earlier, not only in my career, but in my life. And so, I mean, beyond sports, it's really great to be able to have that positive self-talk. And so often, you know, it's like people say, use the positive affirmations and everything. But for me, it was never that natural. It was more natural for me to be so hard on myself. And I feel like a lot of the athletes I've met, even in my career, it's sort of like that's the default mode. And really one of the hardest things to do is to change those thoughts in your mind. So it's almost more work than doing the physical stuff, you know. So any and all tips and experiences, you know, not on this phone call, obviously, because we're almost done, but just things that you found that have really worked to sort of click that over instead of almost making you feel like you're faking it, you know, like, how can I say I'm really feeling lean and fast if that's really not how I'm feeling, you know, but I'm just interested in just hearing and learning more experiences about how those positive affirmations can really start working, because I just think it's so key to everything, and to feel like you're not being phony saying them, you know?
Yeah.
But
I
just like the whole focusing on really what they're doing right, what your clients are doing right, you know. what I'm personally doing right, I think that's such a positive thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it's just, it's reminding myself as in as well as my clients of why are we doing in this, whatever the sport is in the first place, and usually it's for the love of the game or the sport, and you have to put that enjoyment and that love in there, otherwise it's not going to work. And so it's just a reminder of, it comes back to the basics of why you started it in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really important to get that fun factor back. And
yeah, exactly.
And that kind of playfulness, like when we were a kid.
Exactly.
Yeah, just to ask what aspects, what drew you to the sport initially? Yeah, what attracted you to it? And, you know, that movement and, yeah, sometimes it's friends and, yeah, just being able to you know, just that feeling of accomplishment. Yeah, just in the particulars about the sport, whatever it is, you know, just bringing in all your senses to the experience. So, yeah, that's great. And, Amy, anything, what you want to share what you found most helpful or any gems that you learned?
The thing that I found most helpful was when you helped me 2 weeks ago before I had the coaching session with that principal dancer. And we talked about her bringing more enjoyment into her dancing, making it more fun, and breaking down, instead of her visualizing the one huge dance, to breaking it down into separate, smaller parts. And that she really grasped onto well. She loved the idea of just breaking it down into little short segments and kind of, you know, getting her hands around that. So that worked really well. And then just talking about her as a person having a little more balance in her life.
Yeah, yeah. It's, one performance isn't like your whole life, I think.
Right.
Having other things to fall back on. Exactly. And I think that's a good thing, like, for any major competition or that your athletes are going through to, you know, they're going to have this thing, big thing coming up, but it's good to have them plan something afterward. You know, what are you going to do afterward? No matter what happens in this competition, plan something that happens afterward. They go out for pizza, or they're going to go for a nice swim, or go for a little walk on the beach, or vacation. You know, plan something afterward that they can do that's enjoyable, so that you realize, okay, this is, you know, this. There's lots of different aspects to life. That way it's every, you know, that way it takes attention off of that having to perform to perfection kind of thing. Yeah. Okay, well, great. Yeah, I'm so glad that was helpful. This is helpful for all of you. That would be a good title for a book, Perform to Perfection. Or Don't Perform to Perfection. Something. Like you said, it doesn't have to be perfect. Done is better than perfect. So, great. Well, thank you all for joining us, and this is a great discussion. I'm so glad that we could all talk. It's a women's group today. Sometimes it's all guys. Sometimes it's half and half. So, this is great. Good energy. And so our next call will be the March the 14th. Yeah, Thursday. Yeah, the same time, and then we'll just keep the same new phone number. And, if you have any questions you want me to answer on the next call or topics, I don't know if you have any topic. Do you have any, I'll just ask you real quick right now, do you have particular topics you'd like me to address or like us to talk about that are of interest to you? You know, mental training topics or coaching or business or marketing? Okay, I think if you do, just go ahead and everyone's in deep thought. Go ahead and just...
Think about it.
Or anyone can jump in.
Well, I know the MP3s are super popular and really effective with your clients, but maybe just a couple other tools that you found that really usually work and that can just sort of be a staple of your practice and your approach, that could be helpful. Because I know you have so much information, you know, but just over all the years and all the athletes you've worked with, just some approaches that you feel like are really just good and solid to have. So that, because I think I would like to feel that I have sort of my go-to, you know, like, and then there's all kinds of other tools, but definitely feeling like I've got in my toolkit a go-to three or four things that you can always try if one thing's not working.
Yeah, great. Okay, I'm writing that down here.
Just sort of your most, most used or most successful or most well-received maybe even techniques.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm right, and so thinking of those, what those are right now. Yeah. specifics about that. Okay, good. We can talk about that. Top tools in the toolkit.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you. Anyone else? Requested topics?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, well, great. If you think of things during the week, or just let me know. You can always email me. And, great having you all on the call. This is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks,
yeah.
Dr. Joanne.
Thanks a lot. And we'll talk in 2 weeks on March the 14th. Okay.
Perfect. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye. Goodbye. Thanks.
Have a great weekend. Bye.